Welcome back to one of my favorite sports podcasts, Frizz and the Grizz, with your host Trudo and my guy, Keith Frizzy Frizz.
Hello. It's been a long week off, but we are back and at it. It's Frizz and the Grizz, your boy Trudo here with you. And D, as always, good show for you today. We're going to talk a lot of NBA, NFL drafts. But first, D, what it do?
What an intro. You can tell we took a week off. Felt like it took a while to spit that one out.
Yeah, I forgot. I usually say to rate, subscribe, it'll do all that stuff. But the people know by now.
They know. Please make sure y'all hit us up on all the socials and all the platforms. Rate, subscribe, comment, review, all of that goodness. I mean, everything's good over here. Been a long week. Been a long, long, exhausting, drawn-out week. And I'm not even talking about work. I'm not even talking about life. I'm talking about watching these goddamn Lakers lose 4-1, bro. It's just long nights watching these West Coast games just for pure disappointment.
It's a tough thing being a fan of a West Coast team on the East Coast. I couldn't do it, man. I'd be just watching the replays the next day on ESPN or something.
And that, like, they don't even like help us out. Like Sunday they will. Saturdays and Sundays they will. They'll tip off at 1-3, you know, one of those games. But weekdays, nope. 10:30 start. Just like, come on, man. And they do the staggered scheduling, like March Madness, where like if the game before them is running late, they'll push the clock a little bit. Mm. They don't want it to overlap. They want, you know, TNT wants to show that game in its entirety. So like if it's supposed to be tipping off at 10:30, the game takes longer. That's prior to it. It might tip off at like 10:50.
Hey, man, these are the complaints of a man who has a team that's very popular, that gets talked about on all the platforms. Your game gets pushed back because everyone wants to watch it. Meanwhile, I'm an Orlando Magic fan. My attention will be distracted today. They're playing as we speak. I have the screen over here with the Magic game on. We don't even get on national TV. I have to watch it on NBA TV, which I don't even have. So it's tough sailing for Magic fans.
Yes, I can imagine. So y'all that are watching and listening, hit us up with the plug so that we can watch these games for free. We ain't got to pay for this stuff.
We're always looking for free shit. If you're DraftKings, FanDuel, throw some bread. You can sponsor the show. There you go. But like we said, we have a good show today. I feel like we're just going to get right into it. Usually we just kind of putter around because we had eight playoff series. Either some of them have ended, some of them are still going on. We'll cover them all today. And then the NFL draft, obviously, there's a lot to get into. There was some crazy shit in the first round. I know we're going to talk about the Atlanta Falcons at some point. Mm-hmm. But let's get right into the NBA action. I think the best way to go is let's talk about the series that have already completed. Okay. Then we'll get into the ones that are still ongoing as of today on Tuesday. Do you want to take Lakers versus Nuggets first, or do you want to take the Pelicans versus the Thunder first?
I'll do Lakers first, just so I get it out of the system and just be done and over with. So obviously, for those that are unaware of it, that series ended 4-1 late last night. A series that I will say confidently, and we were on this show saying it, and I've said it amongst my friends, like, am I glad that they drew Denver? No, but it was at least good to see them fight the way that they did each game. Denver is just clearly head and shoulders better than them. They're the best team in the NBA. I don't care what the records say. They are the champs. They have about to be three-time MVP, 3 out of 4 years when it comes to Jokic. Rising star. Like, everybody knew who Jamal Murray was, but like, he's just doing things that are absolutely incredible in clutch time. And oh, let me not forget about Mr. Dunker, Aaron Gordon, and Michael Porter Jr. that hits everything that he shoots. So the Lakers put up a good fight. 4-1 makes it seem like, you know, how do you say that's a good fight? It's a gentleman's sweep, essentially, but it's the same shit that happened last year where it was a 4-game sweep, but every game was one possession when they lost.
Yeah, I think there was some crazy stat where like the Lakers had led the series, like as far as holding the lead the majority. Yeah, they led more than the Nuggets, but the Nuggets still pulled it off at the end. It's tough for the Lakers, man. You know, I know there's a lot of blame going around today. Fans want to fire the coach. They want to do this, do that. I know Darvin Ham made some boneheaded decisions in the series, and you can get into those, but I don't know, man. For me, it's just like the Nuggets are the premier team, like you said. The Lakers roster just isn't that. You have LeBron, who's pushing 7 years old. What was that?
You said he's pushing 70. I was just laughing.
Oh, pushing 70 years old. AD, they call him Mr. Street Clothes. LeBron and AD showed up for the most part in this series.
That I will say. And so there, I won't go down the rabbit hole of like the difference between Kobe and LeBron. I won't do that, I promise. But the stupid complaining that I heard with the way that he went about like his interview or the post game like interview and whatnot, talking about health, like guys were missing and blah, 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 blah. This was the healthiest this team has been since LeBron has been on the team. Like AD played the most games he's played. We talked about it all season. If you glass house, something's going to happen. Oh, he broke a fingernail. Something's going to happen where Anthony Davis is going to miss time. He didn't. He played the most games of his career. LeBron James at damn near 40 played over 70 games. Austin Reeves played every single game. So like health was not an issue for this team. It was just them facing a better team. And like you can only do so much. I'm not going to put 100% of the blame on Darvin Ham, him being the head coach, but he got outclassed by Michael Malone. He got absolutely out-strategized by him in clutch moments. And then he made some bonehead decisions when it came to timeouts that he didn't use. Timeouts that he used too quickly, and then just random challenges that were like, we're wasting timeouts by you doing this.
I mean, I don't know what you want LeBron to say. He's not going to just be like, my team sucks, my coach sucks. He went the injury route just to like not put blame on anyone.
The other team credit. There's nothing wrong with saying they're just a better team.
I will say, like, I believe they missed Vanderbilt the majority of the series, correct?
Yes, he didn't play.
And their key acquisition in the offseason was Gabe Vincent, who's been pretty much MIA the entire season. So those are two guys that would have helped. Either way, I think the Nuggets are still the superior team. To be fair to the Lakers, and I'm usually the one who likes to hate the Lakers, a lot of the ESPN analysts, the basketball gurus, they were saying clean sweep. I thought the Lakers put up a good fight, and we could see maybe this Nuggets team put on another insane run like they did last year and lose 3-4 games this postseason. We'll look back at this series and be like, well, the Lakers may have given them the biggest run for their money. Who knows? I'm just saying, like, glass half full if you're a Lakers fan. I did see some report, like, an hour ago on Reddit where one of the reporters said LeBron's likely to opt out this year. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a situation where he's going to try to re-sign with the Lakers for more money, or do you have any concerns that he would actually leave the Lakers?
No. I think he retires as a Los Angeles Laker. He's building, like, a $100 million compound in L.A., he's got family that's in it. Well, his family's in LA. Bronny's technically at USC still until we figure out what he's doing this summer. So no, I don't see him moving. If that maybe at most, I know they joked around like him going to like San Francisco. Is that where's Golden State playing again? Yeah. Not in San Francisco.
They're in San Francisco. You're right.
Okay. Yeah, if like him going there to go, you know, team up with a clayless Golden State team because he's out of there too. But no, he's opting out just to get the max. So I don't see that being an issue. I don't see him wanting to go anywhere else.
One last thing before we touch on the Nuggets. As a Lakers fan, like, where do you see them going from here?
So I've been a huge advocate for this because, look, don't get me wrong. Bringing a championship to the team, like, I'm happy about that. 2020, I don't care what anybody says, still a championship. Like, 50 years from now, I'm still going to remember that they beat the teams that they beat to win the championship down in the bubble. But right now you're banking your team on a 40-year-old LeBron James who, yes, he keeps pushing father time to, you know, to the side, but you also are banking on the health of Anthony Davis and these role players. I just don't see I don't see it happening. What? What are you throwing up to three?
They have three first-round picks unlocked this offseason, so they could make a move theoretically.
Yeah, look, man, I'm always going to be team stop middling. I've said about the Saints, I'll say it about the Lakers. I don't like just limping into the playoffs to get your ass whooped in the first round. Like, who's to say they don't come across Denver next year? They're not going anywhere. The only team, the only player they lost was Bruce Brown this past year. So, like, I'm not going to say blow it up, but I'm saying you need to start thinking about post-LeBron at some point, because this just teetering along being, you know, a 7-8 seed. One last point too before I go is somebody mentioned it on TV today, and I was like, damn, that's a good point. LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Hall of Famers. but they are at the point of their career where they cannot pull a team to win. LeBron James averaged a triple-double, and they almost got swept.
Can I offer you some hypotheticals?
Sure.
All right. Send those three first-round picks out. Yes or no? DeJounte Murray?
No.
Trae Young?
No.
How about this one? This one is an interesting one. A lot of speculation with the Cavs, Donovan Mitchell not being super thrilled being there. If they lose to the Magic, Donovan Mitchell?
Potentially, but no, because he's the, it's not offense. They're going to get offense. It's defense. It's wing defending that's whooping their ass.
Fair enough. On the Nuggets side, you know, great. Kudos to the Nuggets. I thought they didn't play at their apex. They kind of relaxed the days ago most of this series. They kind of kept the Lakers in it for the most part, and then they turned on the gas on the pedal in like the fourth quarter and just kind of the Nuggets machine started going. I have a little concern. Like, I would like to see a little more urgency out of the Nuggets. I know they had the gentleman sweep of the Lakers. Still like to see a little more urgency. I'm hoping they pick it up because their next round opponent is going to be very difficult in the Timberwolves.
No concern whatsoever on my end.
No concern?
No. So I've talked about this ad nauseum here with champions have the ability to flip a switch. And we saw that literally in this series mid-game where they'd be like, all right, we went down 20. Snap. All of a sudden they're up 10. And every single game that the Lakers had a halftime lead, they were like, all right, we're down 10, whatever, snap of a finger, let's actually like start to play. I'm not going to say that they were playing with their food with the Lakers because like they could have lost every single game that they won. But I just think they are at a point where Nikola, however you want to pronounce it, Jokic, is just an incredible facilitator who won't let his team lose. And it's not him scoring all the time. It's not him rebounding all the time. It's not him passing all the time. It's a combination of what he wants to do and what's important in the game. There were times where he was like, all right, you guys are going to pull this double. Guess what? Michael Porter Jr. is going to hit five straight threes. All right, you guys are going to not pull this double. I'm going to back AD down and post you up hook shot. Okay, you guys are going to try to double team me and Michael Porter Jr. I'm going to make sure that I pass it to the dunker down low. Like he is the point guard that other teams in the NBA wish they had, and they still have Jamal Murray bring the ball up.
I think the Nuggets are like a really interesting case study in the idea of that you don't need two superstar players. Like I know Jamal Murray I know Jamal Murray is an all-star caliber-ish player. I don't think he's ever made an all-star team to this point. He's at that level though. But the Nuggets are an interesting case study in the idea of continuity and having complementary pieces, because everyone around Jokic just fits a perfect role, right? You have Michael Porter Jr., who's a marksman from the outside. You have the pick and roll partner in Murray, and they resurrected Aaron Gordon from the dead from the Orlando Magic because he's become one of the best fourth options in the NBA as far as playing that dunker spot, knowing his role. They're just all playing and the machine is just so beautiful. It's not quite the Golden State where it's like you have all these great shooters, but when you watch Golden State in their prime, they just played with such a sense of what each other will be doing. And this team's been together for the Nuggets, their core, for 3+ years now, and it's just an interesting case study in the idea of like maybe it's not always the best idea to just keep adding superstars like the next team we're going to talk about in the series between the Timberwolves and Suns.
So before we go to the next point, I just want to mention when it comes to what you were just saying with superstars, I think the three superstar era is dead.
Yeah.
D-E-D, dead. Reason being, last 4 out of 5 champions, Toronto had Kawhi Leonard, Pascal Siakam, and
Fred VanVleet. I mean, that was a very good comp, good players.
What I'm saying, you have a superstar and then you have complementary players.
Yeah.
Champion after that, the Lakers in the bubble. I'll give them that. AD and LeBron, those are superstars. So I'll give you
that's
that.
Two,
they
though.
Were probably,
that's two.
Yeah, not three. But they were probably not winning one, that championship if two, COVID didn't happen. Three. They were still winning that championship. I don't care what anybody said. They were the number one team before the world shut down. Year after that, the Bucks, Giannis, Middleton and Brooke Lopez, Drew Holiday. Like I said, middling players, all-star caliber, but not superstars. Golden State post Clay, post Draymond, like injury-wise. It was just Steph Curry that beat the crap out of the Celtics. And then last year, the Nuggets. So like this three, you need three superstars to win. No, you need a superstar that has the ability to carry a team that I just don't think LeBron and AD can do anymore. AD because of the way he plays and LeBron because of his age.
Well, I think it becomes even more challenging with the new CBA rules with the lead apron, the idea of, you know, you have the first apron where you enter the luxury tax. And then when you get a certain amount over, it's colloquially called the lead apron, where once you go over that second apron of salary cap, you no longer can add mid-level exceptions to your roster. You can no longer piece together multiple players to aggregate salary and make a trade. And the Suns are kind of in this world now where they're going to be absolutely fucked by this lead apron. They're stuck now with Bradley Beal's contract, which, if you guys don't remember, he had a no trade clause going to Phoenix, and that was a big thing lowering his value in the market. He did not waive that. He still has a no trade clause, so he can say no to any trade. Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, those salaries together already have you way over the salary cap. This team got beat by the Timberwolves because two main reasons, in my opinion, not just one. One reason, lack of depth. The Timberwolves bench and secondary guys absolutely worked the Suns. They had a huge point differential in their favor in that aspect. And number two, while you add all these superstars, we talked about the Nuggets in complementary basketball, these three players in Booker, Durant, and Beal do not play complementary roles to each other. It's a lot of iso ball, and one of the biggest indictments of the Suns, and I know Zach Lowe was harping on this, there were so many possessions where KD just stood in the corner three. Mm-hmm. KD wasn't happy about that. You heard his comments after the series. This is just a complete mess for the Suns.
Yeah, they're in some trouble. Frank Vogel, sorry, but he's out of there. He's going to be the scapegoat, as they typically happen when it comes to these types of teams.
I thought Frank Vogel, for what he was given, he had the Suns to being the 12th best defense in the NBA, and people thought this defense would be bottom trash. 20. Yeah. Yep. So Frank Vogel did a great job, but I agree with you in that he's going to be the scapegoat because they can't get rid of the players.
Nope. They're always going to blame the coach. Monty Williams got fired out of there the year after they went to the finals. So like, it's always going to be the coach. But the Suns are in trouble because they are getting older when it comes to KD. He's part of that area of, I just don't think he can carry a team anymore. He would be a great, you know, secondary player. He's not your A1. He's A1 when it comes to Hall of Fame, but he's not A1 when it comes to leading a team anymore. Beal can't play defense. Yusuf Nurkic was there. Jurkic? I can't remember how to pronounce his
you
name.
You could have just left Beal at Beal can't play because he's always hurt.
Yeah, that too. Like him not being on the court does not help. But like Devin Booker was a pseudo point guard. I know he played point guard when he was at Kentucky, but like he's a scorer. He's not looking to, like you were just saying, get the ball in the best position for Kevin Durant to score. He's looking to get himself a bucket because he's a bucket getter. So like them getting rid of a Chris Paul hurt them substantially, obviously, because like there were times where you just needed to weather the storm. Minnesota, we're going to talk about them in a second, but like they're just athletically gifted. And they're not snipers, but if they go on here's a layup, missed shot. Here's a dunk, missed shot. Here's a layup. You need that point guard on your team to be like, yo, let's settle this down and let's get an easy bucket before they start rolling. Because once that crowd gets into it, once Anthony Edwards hits a three, it's over. Like they got dudes calling this man the next coming of Michael and Kobe because like he's a slasher, but like
he's a killer.
Yeah, when LeBron was early in his career, you were like, all right, we'll live with them dunking on us. Just don't let him start hitting jump shots because if he does that, we're screwed. And that's exactly what Anthony Edwards is doing right now.
Yeah, I know we were all about Jimmy Butler last playoffs, calling him. Anthony Edwards is him.
My goodness, this kid is special.
I think he's 23 years old and, you know, this is his first big time in the playoffs. I know they made the playoffs last year and it was
22.
He's 22, and it didn't go very well against the Nuggets, so they don't have a ton of playoff experience with some of those younger guys. He was ready for the moment. He did not back down. My favorite thing was that his idol growing up in basketball is KD. He got a chance to go one-on-one duel KD, and he was loving every moment about it. And I think Anthony Edwards is, as long as he doesn't say anything stupid because he's known to be saying some dumb shit. This dude's the face of the league going forward because this kid exudes the love of the game. Like a lot of these guys, you watch them play and like you think, oh, they're going for stats, awards, and money, this, that. I watch Edwards play. This dude just likes the ball, and he just cares about balling and winning. And it's amazing. And I love what the Timberwolves have done. It's going back to last year, adding Mike Conley, because like you said, one of the things that they lacked was that leadership, that mm-hmm. that got to be a calming presence when things go crazy in the fourth quarter. Mike Conley's been that for them. They have their scorer in Edwards, who's, you know, the MJ Light. And they have two bigs who have very different skill sets. That one is an elite defensive player of the year. He will be DPOY. And the other in Karl Towns, joke on him all you want. He can get you a bucket inside. He can stretch the floor. I love this Timberwolves team. I'm very excited for this next round matchup against the Nuggets, because if you think back to last year's playoffs, they asked Nikola Jokic after the playoffs, who was the toughest opponent you played? They said the Minnesota Timberwolves. So this is going to be a battle in the next round.
Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to it. I think, I want to keep saying kid because I could like make myself old. But I hated on him when he first got, or the talk about drafting. He said Wembanyama was going to be, you know, him, that guy. So, like, I'm not ready to say that it's going to be Anthony Edwards, because I really think those two are going to be battling for who is going to be promoted the most in the NBA as the face. But something that Anthony Edwards brings to the table that a lot of these other superstars that we thought were going to be that guy, your Devin Booker's a couple seasons ago, your Jason Tatum's obviously, is Anthony Edwards makes incredible defensive plays. And I think that stands out when you have your best player chase down blocking somebody else that dunks. And it's like, you just don't see that from the point / two guard position, no. Which is going to elevate him to, you know, Dwayne Wade status, essentially. Dwayne Wade for two seasons, the year that he won the championship and the year after, people were like, oh, he's the best player in the NBA. He was a two-way guard, and Edwards plays very similar. Yeah. So like, I'm not ready to call him Jordan or Kobe yet, but like, he could be flirting with like how D Wade played.
He's D Wade with a little bit more outside game.
Oh yes. Yeah. Dwayne Wade was definitely a sub 30% three-point shooter, and I think Anthony Edwards is close to that, but like, it's just more of a volume thing. Edwards is going to pull that shot if you give it to him. He's going to be like, I'm taking this.
I think one of the most impressive things about this Timberwolves team in this first round is that with a younger team, you know, well, not younger, but you know, your superstar in Edwards being younger, they put their foot on the Suns' neck and they never let up. You know, some teams would, they're up three games or up two games, let the foot off the pedal a little bit. Not with this Timberwolves team. They got the Suns where they wanted them, and they stomped them out. Just one real quick thing on the Suns side is, it's kind of crazy that all the trades that they have made in the past year and a half have all completely backfired. Even going back to Kevin Durant, in a sense, as soon as Matt Ishbia bought the team, they made that aggressive trade the day of, giving everything to the Nets to get Kevin Durant, essentially depleting their assets. They make a trade while it was only second-round picks to get Bradley Beal, depleted all their second-round picks, and they gave five second-round picks and some pick swaps out. You're looking at a team now that is completely strapped by the salary cap and have literally no assets to trade. There's nowhere to go from here for the Suns. And if you're the Suns front office, I think you need to take a long, hard look in the mirror and decide what is your future. Because we see that the West is getting increasingly competitive. It was probably one of the best Western Conference top to bottom playoff, you know, seeding teams that we've seen in a very long time. This Suns team seems like they're just going to be middling, you know, 6-5 seed, and there's no way out. Kevin Durant's getting up there in age. At some point, he's not going to be valuable to you. You have to ask yourself the question, is it worth moving off of some of these pieces? You can't trade Bradley Beal because he's worth nothing at this point, but is it worth exploring the Kevin Durant or Devin Booker route and starting fresh?
I honestly think your value is higher with Devin Booker than it is with Kevin Durant. I just think it's going to be a lot harder. Unless he asks out, I think it's going to be harder to trade a Kevin Durant than it would be for a Devin Booker. But yeah, the Suns are in trouble because there are teams that are only going to get better because of their youth compared to the Suns that need to find defense and playmaking. They just rip off these teams that will be better than the Suns next year. I promise you this. New Orleans Pelicans, Sacramento Kings, Houston Rockets, Memphis Grizzlies. Those four teams are teams that are, people forget that John Morant is coming back. Those four teams are going to be better than the Phoenix Suns next season.
I don't know yet about the Rockets.
Lakers. What's that?
I don't know yet about the Rockets. Grizzlies, I'm here with that because the prior year they were a two seed. Who was the other team outside of
Pelicans and the Kings?
The Kings, I don't know what's going on with the Kings. They had all their guys this year and they still were a play-in team.
But they're younger. What I'm saying is these other teams have the ability to elevate. Ceiling for the Suns is exactly what just happened. There are other teams they might have a lower floor, a higher floor, but their ceiling is much lower. We haven't seen the best of the Kings. We haven't seen the best of the Pels with Zion. We haven't seen the best of Houston with a full season under the scheme of what they have with Ime Udoka. And then you have Ja Morant coming back, who had the number one seed in the playoffs, is number one seed for the West two seasons ago.
I don't know what to do with the Suns. Just real quick before we move on to the next team, just shout out to Chris Finch. Hopefully he gets better. Did you see what happened to the poor man?
Did he tear his ACL?
He tore something in his knee or something.
I saw the play. Terrible.
Coach goes out. It's unfortunate because the first time the Timberwolves have won a playoff series in like 20 years, he should be ecstatic. Yeah, he can't even. He has to go to the hospital and get his knee looked at, and it's. He'll probably be on like one of those little scooters on the sideline the rest of the series.
Well, remember the coach for college basketball?
That's who I was trying to think of. It was Florida Gulf Coast. I forget the coach.
Was it? No. It was definitely somebody else because the dude, something Barrett was the not gonna remember.
Yeah, that's such a deep pull. It was a nice try though.
Mm-hmm. Definitely tried. His son hit the game winner in the NCAA tournament. I just can't remember. And then he fell over on the sideline.
We'll get it afterwards. I'm sure you look it up. Speaking of trying, the Pelicans tried. They put up a fight the whole series against the Thunder. Again, another sweep. I thought after game one, this is going to be a very competitive series. Thunder won game one by, I think, like 2 or 3 points. CJ McCollum had an opportunity to either tie or win the game in game one. And we're like, oh, Pelicans, they could be for real. Thunder had their kind of playoff initiation moment where they're a little skittish in the first game. But after that, man, this team just took off and stomped out the Pelicans the rest of the way. I'm still not buying them as a championship contender. I think they're going to have a very difficult matchup around two, whether it's the Clippers or the Mavericks. But this team is come and they are arrived, and I do not think they're going to go anywhere in the next near future.
These boys are fast. They play real fast basketball. And I think because of their young legs, that's going to cause a lot of issues for whoever they play up against. Dallas plays a little bit more of a half-court style of offense. Same thing with the Clippers. Clippers are just older. So, I don't think that's a good matchup for the Clippers to have to run up against these young gunners for the Thunder. But Shea is just an incredible prove why he's an MVP candidate. Chet played decently well. I know he's going up against a much bigger body. The Pels had Valanciunas. Is that how you say his name?
Jonas Valanciunas. Yeah.
Yeah. I, that one's a tough one for me. And he held his own. I'm not saying that he's going out there getting 20 and 20, but he held his own. And then you had Giddey was playing decent off of obviously some secondary playmaking and scoring. I wasn't trying to make a joke on that.
I thought you were going to make a joke. I thought you were going to make a.
No, bro, I'm staying off of that topic. That's not for me. I'm not going to say anything about something like that. But essentially, the Thunder played. They finished the series the way that they were supposed to. And a team that you have, I would say, not as much experience when it comes to like playing with your food. They were like, we're not going to do this. We have to win this game. And they went out there and did it. It's not easy to beat a team four times in a row. And they went out there and did it. Even if they didn't have Zion, the Thunder still did what they were supposed to. Jalen Williams, that was also the secondary scorer. He had an incredible series. I think he averaged like 20 plus, something like that.
The Thunder are a crazy team because not only are they young, I think 99% of their points were scored by players younger than 24 years old in that series for the Thunder, which is insane. They're going to be a problem for a long time in the West. But not only that, they have a ton of draft assets, and I'm curious because they've been accumulating picks forever. Tying it really quick back to the Suns.
I know where you're going with this.
How fun would it be if they just said, "Hey, we got to pay our young guys, our Chet, our Jay Williams, our SGA. We're going to have to give them a ton of money in a couple of years as their contracts expire. We have 1 or 2 years ahead of us to play with the salary cap before that happens." Would it not be so much fun to have the homecoming reunion
back.
Of Kevin Durant back to the to throw him 3 first round picks that they have so many first round picks that don't belong to them. Give them all that garbage and get Kevin Durant for a loaner for a couple of years. If Kevin Durant, let's just hypothetical. I know your average NBA fan just wants to shit on Kevin Durant for ring chasing, going to Golden State. Does he get forgiven if he goes back to his old stomping ground and bring them a championship?
If he brings them a championship, yes. Mm. Because of exactly what Cleveland did with LeBron. Sam Presti would definitely want that shit because it's like, why not bring him back? Like, it's going to sell tickets, obviously. Like, it's going to get them a ridiculous amount of TV time because OKC really wasn't on TNT or ESPN all that much. With being the number one seed this year, they really didn't have nationally recognized games. Adding a Kevin Durant would do that. But you know who wouldn't like that shit? Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Chet Holmgren. They'd be like, yo, we're the fucking superstars. Why are you bringing this headache of a fucking guy in here where we got to deal with this shit and like he's going to jump ship and blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't think he goes in there with the same intention that as much as I talk crap about him, LeBron James went to Cleveland to say, I'm winning a championship for this team. Kevin Durant goes to OKC to see like, yo, man, we're going to get this championship because of me. And it's like, no, dude, you're 36. You're going to get that championship because of Gilgeous-Alexander.
On the other side with the Pelicans, just real quick, like I do feel bad for them and their fan base because they didn't really have a real chance at this thing.
Stripped away.
Zion's out as usual. When he plays, he can be fantastic, but that is a big if when he plays. And then Brandon Ingram, like he was there, but he going into the playoffs and the play-in, he was hurt for multiple weeks prior to that, and he just had not seemed like himself yet. So I think he was still dealing through injury in the playoffs. This Pelicans team, if they're all healthy and together, and that's a big if, is a very good team. I just think all things considered with injuries and you know guys probably playing less than 100%, they didn't really have a shot in this series.
No. They're still two pieces away. I think they'll be better than the Suns. So like, I'm not saying that like they're going to be bad, but they're still two pieces away. When he's on the best ability is availability, and Zion just isn't in the time that they need him. And Brandon Ingram, as I wanted him to be better this series, I was like this. I didn't understand the whole injury aspect of it, but I wanted him to be better because I was like, this is the time for you to elevate yourself into that conversation of being a top tier like superstar. Like not an elite player, but like top tier, like you're going to get like all-star starter atmosphere. And he just couldn't get it.
I do want to shout out though, Pelicans do have some other interesting role players that are high level. I think they have good pieces in guys like Trey Murphy, III and Herb Jones providing, you know, you're out on that. Trey Murphy's
fans. I think they are good role players that were able to spark during a playoff series, but like they weren't like this during the regular season.
I think they're good role players that you can win a championship with if your other three guys are there healthy and playing at their best ability.
What was that dude that went off in the bubble?
For
we never heard of him again. He averaged like 30 points a game.
He was on the Pacers this year. Bubble Warren, TJ Warren.
DJ Warren. I feel like they're both him.
Nah, they're different players.
Yeah. What I'm saying is that like performance in the playoffs and then we won't hear back from him again.
They've all been very good. Those two guys have been very good in the regular season. You just don't hear much because it's the Pelicans. No one cares.
Maybe so.
I guess I didn't mean to cover three teams in the West to start, but let's just finish off the West. Mavs, Clippers. This series is going to be a dogfight.
Best series of the playoffs.
Kawhi is probably going to be out the rest of the series.
Should be. They play better without him.
They do. I think Paul George is a weird guy where when he's relegated to like the number two role on an offense, he just doesn't know what to do with himself. He's kind of passive and kind of not all-star Paul George. But when he is the dude, he takes it another level. It's crazy. On the flip side, the Mavs have been pretty good. They just went through weird spells of just looking like shit. Like even game four, you know, we all thought Mavs would come out hot, up 2-1 home. Down 30 like that, and they can turn it on in a heartbeat and just and pull the game right back with Luke and Kyrie. The Mavs are at their best a championship team, but they're just so much variance in how they play. It's hard to really see them going all the way at this point.
I give them the nod over almost any team in the West just because of Luka Doncic. Literally just because of the way that he can carry a team, and that is not including Kyrie. The way like this man is hitting, you know, in the NBA 2K terms, 100% contested shots, greening them. Like, he's just taking some absolutely ridiculous layups, finishes in the paint, fadeaway jumpers that he's hitting from elbows. Like, those two, we've already seen Kyrie win a championship and what he can do in, like, big game situations when it comes to the finals. But I think Luka comes with just, like, that tick, that, like, killer tick that, like, you have to beat him down to eliminate them because he's going to go down swinging in every single game. And I think that's what keeps them in every game that they're going to play against.
Yeah, I don't have much more on the Mavs Clippers. I'll be honest, of all the series that have been going on, it's probably the series I've paid the least attention to. I'm going to be completely honest and transparent about that. Do you have any last thoughts? Because I wanted to talk about the Celtics Heat.
No, I mean, I said it was the best series of the playoffs just because of the way that they, you know, it goes back and forth. I'm not going to give the 2-2 split between, I'm sorry, the Magic and Cavs. It's usually a blowout. Somebody's getting smacked by 20.
It hasn't started yet, the series.
Yeah, exactly. But the Mavs clip series, that's a back and forth. Like, there that game on Sunday? I think it was Sunday. Mm-hmm. The game on Sunday was just absolutely beautiful to watch as a basketball fan. Just two heavyweight fighters giving left-hand hooks the whole fucking fight. It was awesome.
All right, I want to talk about a team that I actually think could win a championship, and the Boston Celtics. You know, for me, this series, the Celtics have been absolutely dominant. Outside of game two, which is the most flukiest Heat game you would, because the Heat are always good for this man. Eric Spoelstra, I don't think he's ever won coach of the year, but he's, in my opinion, the best coach of the NBA, hands down. The way he has his team prepared, not only strategically, but just far as conditioning and getting these guys, you know, basketball ready. You knew he was going to pull out a game in this series. Game two, I think the Heat shot over 50% from the 3-point line, which is absolutely bananas. Outside of that game two explosion by the Heat, it's been all Celtics. You know, it's tough for the Heat. Obviously down Jimmy Butler. They're down Rozier. Jaime Jaquez is not going to play tomorrow, so it looks like they're throwing in the towel on this series. But from the Celtics, I still think they've shown that championship pedigree that you want to see at a team, especially just looking back to the game yesterday, which was, what, game four. It's not, with the Celtics, it's not just Jason Tatum. It's not just Jaylen Brown. You saw Derek White go off for a career high.
38
points in game four. So this team's multifaceted in all fronts, and the only thing that would hold them back from a championship is the big question mark and the big man, Kristaps Porzingis, who injured his calf, I believe, in game four, and I don't know what his status is going to be the rest of the playoffs. I'm assuming he'll be back. But that is my only concern with the Celtics at this point.
Yeah, they are a wagon. And for those that are in New England that hear me talk about the Celtics, like, I say it just based off of trying to give an unbiased opinion when it comes to what I think their ceiling is. They're a championship team. I'll give them that. But I also said at the beginning of this season that their championship window is based upon people that aren't the Jays. Go back and pull the tape. I said it multiple times that if your season is hanging on Kristaps Porzingis and Jrue Holiday, and where we're at right now, I'm not saying that they're not going to win this series. I think they do. Even if Kristaps is gone for a week, I think they win this series. They probably win the next one. But the issue is when they start to face these bigger teams. If and when you play the Knicks, that's a team that is going to body and bruise your entire team, right? Similar to like what the Heat do, but they actually hit outside shots. And I think not having a Kristaps Porzingis is going to bite them in the ass just because of what he brings to them rebounding. Not even just a shooting. A shooting is always going to be there, but he does a decent job with playmaking when he has the ball. He's not going to get 10 assists, but he'll get the offensive rebound and get it to the right person, which leads to usually a three for the Celtics. So like, I think when you're missing that piece, you put more responsibility on Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. We've seen what happens when they have to do that. They're going to beat the crap out of the Heat. Not worried about the Heat. It's the next round and the round after that where the depth is going to poke its ugly head out, especially if people keep going down. Jason Tatum went down. It was just a twisted ankle. But like back to back, I was like, oh no, KP and then JT. Uh-oh. Bunch of acronyms for them.
Yeah, I don't see them having any issues in the second round either. It's going to be the Magic or the Cavaliers. And
I didn't know that. Okay. I didn't know if they had to draw some the other side. Okay.
No, they got Magic or Cavaliers, and either one of these teams are dead on arrival against the Boston Celtics. It'll be interesting. I think the team that gives them the most problem and would be most problematic for the Celtics would be the New York Knicks, which I think that's the next series we should talk on, because the Knicks, while they don't have the most talented team top to bottom, you know, as far as superstar talent, their best player is Jalen Brunson, who we all laugh when he got 4 years, $100 million, and that contract's an absolute bargain right now. But the Knicks just play hard, man. Like, they're the most Tom Thibodeau team that's ever been constructed. They play their guys 50 minutes a night, and I'm counting, like, he probably runs them suicide drills after the game to get to the 15 minutes.
Definitely running sprints after the game.
But this team plays hard. They crash the glass, get offensive rebounds. They don't give up any possession. They are going balls to the wall. That I feel like that could be problematic for the Celtics. What's that laugh for? The phrase?
As you say that, the possession that the Knicks just had was missed shot, offensive rebound, missed shot, offensive rebound, transition, open three for a bucket. Like, they didn't give up on the play. It was just funny that you were saying that, and that's exactly what just happened.
You know, the biggest thing for the Knicks in the 76ers series, I think we're going to talk on this series right now. The biggest thing that has given the Knicks the advantage is not the guy you would think it would be, not Jalen Brunson. The biggest,
Josh Hart.
Yes, the biggest differentiating factor in the series has been Josh Hart, because teams have dared Josh Hart to shoot on the outside for three, and they are collapsing the paint on Brunson and basically leaving Hart open in rotation, and he's making them pay. He's not, I don't believe, a great career three-point shooter, but he is on one in this series.
It's don't get me wrong, this isn't saying that Brunson isn't playing ridiculous, because he is.
Well, but the first two games were pretty bad for him. The first two games for Brunson were not very Brunson-y games.
Yeah, it took him a while to load up, and Hart carried them game one, where he had like 25, I think. But it's Hart, and it also is Hart and Stein center. I don't know who the hell this dude was, but like, he's It's definitely a watered down version of Joel Embiid. How Embiid's averaging 40 points a game. So like, I'm not saying that he's like shutting him down on defense, but he's doing what you just said. He's giving them the ability to score by getting timely offensive rebounds or timely defensive rebounds to kick it out in transition. So like, yeah, I think the Knicks, I think they beat the crap out of Philly. Even if they lose this game, I think it goes back to Philly and they beat them. I don't think they have to worry about this series. I think the Knicks' next opponent, which is most likely going to be Indy, that is going to be a series. My goodness.
Yeah, that's like contrasting styles. You have grit and grind versus fast pace, firing up some shots. On the flip side with the 76ers, it's tough, man, because Embiid has been battling through everything this postseason. He missed half of the season with a knee injury. He had to get, I think, his meniscus shaved down. He comes back, hurts it again versus the Orlando Magic. Fights back and plays in the playoffs, does not look like himself. Man, we found out last week that the man has Bell's palsy. Half of his face is frozen. I want just once in my lifetime to see a full playoffs with Joel Embiid actually healthy. I don't know if it's possible, because we've seen earlier in the season when this man is at his apex, he's the best player in the league. Like, he had the MVP in the bag before he got hurt. He was statistically scoring more points than he was playing, like time-wise. He had more points per minute. So he was averaging something like 32 minutes a game, 34 points. It was absolutely insane. It's tough, man. I think if Joel Embiid's healthy, this is a different series. But here we are today, 3-1 Knicks, and they're trying to close out tonight.
I don't want to hear anybody ever say soft, bitch made, he's out of shape, he's nothing. After what Joel Embiid is going through, he could just sit out. He could just chalk it up and be like, next season, man's got a bum knee that we, some of us probably wouldn't even be able to walk to work. We'd be like, no, I'm out, not doing this. And he's going out there playing 40 minutes a game to try to get his team a win, saying things like, "I'm my team's going to win this series." Like, he's not giving up. Dude is a fighter. Half of the man's face is stuck frozen like a loading screen. Like, he can't blink. He can't feel, like, he can't move his side of his mouth. If he's got a clogged pore, like, he can't blow his nose. Like, the man is literally getting the shit beat out of his body, and he's showing up. So, like, I don't want to hear anybody talk shit about Joel Embiid literally for the rest of his career for what he's doing. It's absolutely admirable. But on the flip side, they're in trouble. They're in trouble because Maxey is incredible as Embiid takes a fadeaway and makes it. Like, Maxey is playing absolutely out of his mind right now, averaging over 20-7, like, great point guard for them. But a shell of himself when it comes to Tobias Harris and Kelly Oubre Jr. Those two should be ashamed of themselves for the way that they've played. Yes.
Before you slander Kelly Oubre Jr., offensively, yes, but defensively, he's done a phenomenal job on Brunson. They've made the adjustment, put him on Brunson, and it has slowed him down.
50 points a game. What do you mean he's done a phenomenal job?
He's done a phenomenal job on Brunson compared to, like, what other options they could do.
Okay. Maybe I'll give you that because, like, he's averaging, you know, 37 instead of 42. But no, both Oubre and Tobias proved, you know, you guys don't ever deserve max. I mean, I don't think Oubre was ever a max contract, but Harris's?
Yeah.
No. Yeah, I'm not ever paying a spot-up shooter like that. Unless Michael Porter Jr., that dude could rebound and shoot. I mean, rebound and play defense better. Tobias Harris, my goodness, this is such a waste of space out there. When you have a guy playing on one leg, half a face, and like all these other things that are going wrong with him, how do you just go out there and put up 8 points a game? Like, you're supposed to be one of the top. You're supposed to be Carmelo Anthony-esque. That was like his player comp, and he's going out there doing this.
Funny little tidbit. Do you know who? This is a random statistic. It's like an advanced, super advanced statistic.
Of these,
do you know who leads the league in tip passes, tip balls? So it's like the ultimate hustle statistic. Basically, deflections, getting a hand on the ball, whether it be a pass or some sort of like shot, some just getting your hands and in interfering defensively.
Kyle Lowry.
No, OG Anunoby.
Oh, really? Nice.
And that is a guy that the Knicks went after, sought after at the deadline to bring him in. And he is, again, we talked about the Knicks and their secret sauce with Tom Thibodeau. It is chaos as far as defense, just causing chaos, running around, just being a goddamn nuisance, tipping balls, diving on the floor. And they added the ultimate Tibbs guy as far as the defensive side of the ball, and he can shoot. This Knicks team's, one thing before we leave the series, I want to root for the Knicks because I enjoy watching this style of play. Like, just this heart, this, you know, these, the Villanova Knicks.
Nova Knicks, baby.
Nova Knicks. I enjoy watching it, but these fucking Knicks fans are making me hate the Knicks.
Stop.
Because
50 years, chill out.
You're telling me to stop? They win a game in Philly in round one, and they're outside the Wells Fargo Center.
Yep.
Stomping on like
the Rocky statue.
they're stomping on like the giveaway items from the 76ers game, just talking shit, stomping on Embiid jerseys, and just like, can y'all just chill out? Do you remember when they won one game against the Hawks and they paraded the streets in Fifth Avenue yelling fuck Trae Young, and then they got swept the rest of the way?
Mm-hmm.
The Knicks fans make this team hard to root for. The Knicks team themselves, very easy to root for. But these goddamn fans who act like they've won a championship after every win, enough with you guys. Enough.
Let them have their time, man. Like, this is exactly what Philadelphia had to go through for years until Nick Foles just went bananas in a playoff stretch and brought them home a championship. Let them have their moment, because I think it was Stephen A. that said, he's like, look, I understand it's been 50 years, but like, let us have this because Giannis is hurt. Who was it? Embiid's hurt. and somebody else in the East. He's like, let us just let us have this, right? Like, let us be happy with this, because next season probably not going to be the two seed because of exactly those guys coming back. So that's why they think this is their year, because it's injury related, but they're going to take it if they get it, right? Like, you can't complain if you win a championship because everybody else was hurt. That's just, it is what it is.
Well, I'm just mad because I'm not having my moment. We'll talk about the Magic Cavs next. The series that still has not started and does not look like it will start tonight. I think the Cavs are going to win this one at home. As a Magic fan, I'm just happy that they showed some tenacity. They went down 2-0 in an embarrassing fashion, weren't in it at all. First two games on the road. Won the next two at home. That shows me that this team has heart. They're not going to quit, not going to give up. For me as a Magic fan, I just want to see some growth and development. I want to see them, you know, our young guys get playoff experience in Franz and Paolo. But I think there's a lot of positivity, win or lose, from the Magic, you know, fans of the Magic, because, like, we're just happy to be here. On the flip side, man, while the Cavs look like they will take a 3-2 lead and potentially just ultimately win this series, there can't be anything but disappointment and unrest if you're a Cavs fan. This team went all in on Donovan Mitchell in creating this team as it's currently constructed. And it just doesn't look like they will ever live up to any bigger expectations than potentially like a one-round win. And if you've been following any of this over the past year, you know, Donovan Mitchell still hasn't re-signed and taken an extension.
Yep.
I don't think he's the point where he wants to be a round one and out team. And if you're a Cavs fan, you have to be very uneasy at this fact that they're not good enough now and your superstar might go. And also on top of that, there are questions about Mobley and Garland playing together. So like the way this team's currently constructed just seems unsustainable.
Yeah, that was going to be my my point itself. Mobley, great young talent, obviously. Spider being the superstar, but that secondary player just isn't there because it's supposed to be Darius Garland. And his best season that he's had since being, you know, in the league, and I think he averaged 18-6. That's not going to get done because he's not averaging 18-6 in the playoffs. He had a game, I think it was game two, where he had 4 points. You can't have that as a secondary player, especially a point guard, if he's supposed to be, you know, helping with distribution. But like, you got to have some type of scoring from the one position. You can't just be a passer. The league is no longer filled with Rajon Rondos. Like, even Rondo could give you playoff 40 if he needed to. Darius Garland can't. And Spider is putting out a lot of effort to, even if he gets this series, to be one and done. And with him not signing that extension, I think that just shows that like he's waiting to see what happens amongst the free agency market to be like, do I want the bag and stay, or and potentially just be a one and doneer, high seed in the playoffs, host a playoff series, and then out in round two, or do I take a less money, a little bit of a pay cut, go to a contender?
To be fair, this series has been relegated to NBA TV, so does it even exist? And second thought on that, probably should have been, because as someone who's watched all four games so far, this basketball is unwatchable. It's like it's a fight in the mud, and it stays close for 5 minutes, and then one team blows the other team out. It's been awful. I'm just hoping that the Magic somehow, some way, pull out a win, because your boy's going to be in Florida the next couple, in 2 weeks from now, when the Magic would be playing a second round matchup against the Celtics, and I got to go if that happens. One series that's competitive record-wise as far as the series spread to another that is not, so that we both of us agreed 2 weeks ago, the series that has the most upside for an upset, our last series on the docket, Pacers-Bucks. And this Bucks team threw in the white towel in game four. No Giannis, still out with the leg injury. Lillard then out with, I don't know what injury it was. And then within 5 minutes...
Achilles,
thank you. Within 5 minutes of the game starting, Bobby Portis, who's been known to have a hot head, punching out, I think it was Nikola Mirotic, knocked his own teammate out, gets two tees and kicked out of the game within 5 minutes. This Bucks team's in shambles. You know, it's a funny team because I've seen people saying, well, I don't understand why they fired their original coach because they were 33-13 or whatever, from the get-go, this team was not right. There was just something off. They didn't play defense at the beginning of the season. They brought in Doc Rivers. The defense improved a little bit. Offense went down to the shitter. They just haven't been able to find the secret sauce. And it's crazy to say this, but I was on this podcast a year ago all about fire Mike Budenholzer.
Yep.
And I think they made a horrible mistake in firing Mike Budenholzer, this team, and trading for Dame, it seems like. It just isn't there for the Bucks, and I don't know what's going to happen with this team going forward.
That PNR didn't work out the way we all thought it was going to between Dame and Giannis. But
they don't run it that much either, which is crazy.
They let Dame go ISO game, and then if he's not doing his ISO game, they let Giannis just sprint down the middle of the court. But I think it was just a weird mix. Hindsight's 2020, that obviously it didn't work out the way that we wanted it to, or like the league expected it to work out. But who's to say they don't have the opportunity next season? Giannis is still under contract. Dame might want out, but if he doesn't, he's like, this is my best chance of winning, and he stays. They still got a shot if they're all healthy. Another year under their belt, obviously. Get Doc the hell up out of there. The one of the worst coaches in the NBA. I don't care if he's got a championship. And this isn't even a Laker thing. This is a pure, if I inherit Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, and Ray Allen with the best bench that's ever assembled in the history of, like, James Posey was ridiculous, Eddie House was ridiculous, like, that team was going to win a championship.
They would have won. 0% chance that Doc Rivers is gone. They're not going to be paying four coaches next year.
No chance he returns. No chance.
Oh, yeah. They're still paying Budenholzer. They're still paying.
You got to find somebody cheap then.
I forgot.
College coach.
It eludes me who they let go in midseason, and they have Doc Rivers for like a 3-year deal or something like that. They're not going to pay another coach an exorbitant amount of money.
What do you call it? What is it called? Damaged goods?
Sunken costs.
Yes, that phrase. That's exactly what it is. I don't care how much money we got. Fucking James Dolan. No, who's Clipper? It's not Dolan.
Steve Ballmer.
Thank you. Steve Ballmer. I was like, that doesn't sound right. Ballmer making billions of dollars off dividends, meaning making billions of dollars off of his billions of dollars that he has. They can afford to pay four to five coaches in fucking 2 years. I don't care.
Can we just talk? We talked about last podcast how much money Steve Ballmer had.
That amount of money.
Steve Ballmer has like billions, like multiple billions of dollars worth of, probably like $50-100 billion worth of Microsoft stock. This man makes almost $1 billion a year just for owning the stock and dividends.
So I got some shares, right? We got some ownerships and some stocks, and we might in a year get like $3. So like the fact that he's making billions off of just money that he's already invested, and they're like, there you go, because you got so much money, this is the cut, this is the percentage of that stock, and he's making $1 billion+. That's just money that, like, that's, you don't crazy. Need, fam. Like, just go out there and, you know, cure cancer, end American hunger, not world hunger. Y'all can deal with that shit. I'm not.
He's like, fuck y'all in Africa. I don't give a shit.
But like, if y'all allies, sure. I don't even go to the political route. But like, end fucking hunger and like get Flint, Michigan some clean water. Like,
there you go.
Let's do stuff like that.
Pay the teachers.
The man got $1 billion off of some dividends, and like people in Flint, Michigan got to buy Poland Springs. Like, come on, man. What are we doing?
So sidetracked on Steve Ballmer. On the flip side, in the Pacers, man, you know, their big playoff debut is with their new core. Pretty impressive. Yeah. I mean, Tyrese Haliburton still coming back into form. I thought he's been okay, but really the big story of the Pacers has been their addition in Pascal Siakam. He's been like the first round MVP so far. I'm not calling him the MVP of the playoffs, but just in the first round itself, like, he's been the man there. This Pacers team is well built. You know, they have Miles Turner, shop locker, stretching the 4-3. And then guys that have been discarded, like Boston Celtic runoff Aaron Nesmith playing great 1-on-1 defense and stretching the floor. I mean, I like this young Pacers team. They draw either the Knicks. They're probably going to draw the Knicks in the second round. It should be a fun matchup of conflicting styles. I mean, this team could be looking at a crazy enough to say, like, an Eastern Conference playoffs run, especially if Haliburton continues to round it a form.
100%. And this is what I was saying earlier. I gave you the wag of the finger when you were talking about the Knicks. I think this, we talk about the Celtics. I think that next series, whoever advances to play the Celtics is going to give them a headache. I don't care if it's the Pacers or it's the Knicks, because the Pacers have length. And it's not even just about like size. Miles Turner, 7 foot, blah, 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 you know, arm length. Pascal Siakam, same thing. A wing that can cover Jason Tatum. We've seen it happen when he played with Toronto. You have Haliburton, who's a 6'6 point guard with a 7 foot wingspan. Like, they have the length to go up against Boston. More, just as much. I think they're actually longer than the Knicks, but the Knicks play better defense. The Pacers just have a ridiculous offense. So it's like that matchup in itself, whoever it is, the Pacers or the Knicks, I think they are, I don't care what anybody says, like they ran through them in the regular season. Playoffs is different. And I think they both will have a really good chance of representing the East if they can get to the Eastern Conference Finals, whichever team, because one of them is going to go, obviously.
We had our first five for today. I think we should cut it out.
We went deep on these fucking playoffs, yeah, bro.
It was eight series we had to cover. I'm assuming next time we meet, we'll be in the round two. So it'll be a lot less to talk about NBA. And we haven't talked for a week, so this is what happened. So we're going to cut out the first five. It's a good one, but we'll save it for next week.
I got one too. Not even one, but like a proposal for you. Doesn't even have to be just because of like the draft, but it could be draft style.
Mm. Okay. We'll table that one.
Something, you pick something. I don't want to tell everybody. It's a little teaser for those that listen in on podcasts and those that watch us live. This is what we like to call a big market tease, where I ain't going to tell you what it is. We'll just pay attention next week, or pay attention the week after.
The worst drafts. Number one, Army draft, getting drafted to the Army. All right, let's segue to the actual draft itself. D, I imagine the NFL draft is like your Christmas.
Yes.
All right, well, overall, was it a fun one?
I think it was great to see teams hit needs outside of Atlanta and stick to the script. I texted you a laundry list of teams that I was very impressed with. Chicago getting it right, Washington getting it right. Although people might not like it, New England got it right. The Chargers, Minnesota got their guy. Maybe a little bit of a stretch, but they still got their guy. And then the back end of the draft, I think there was a ton of teams that like hit where they needed to. This whole situation with Rashee Rice, and then the Chiefs went out there and got the fastest dude out of the draft. This whole situation with Debo and
San Francisco?
Yeah, San Francisco. But what was the other wide receiver's name?
Who that they drafted?
No. Ayuk? Brandon Ayuk. And Debo Samuel with getting paid. And then they went out and got Ricky Pearsall. So I think first round, we don't need to go, you know, second, third round or whatnot. I think there's maybe one or two headliners in the second round. But I think the first round was like very on point with what teams actually needed without too many stretches.
Yeah, I love a couple of teams that I loved. I mean, the Bears are an obvious one. They got Caleb Williams, who is regarded as one of the better prospects at quarterback coming out since like Andrew Luck. As far, I mean, I don't understand why there's so much hate for this man. There's a lot of Caleb Williams hate out there on the internet because he paints his fingernails and
He talks cocky.
Okay, whatever. He's still a very good football player. And then,
yeah, exactly. At the end of the fucking day, the dude's a great football player.
Yeah, it's so stupid. But then with their own draft pick and number nine, getting Rome Odunze, who some people, some scouts regarded him as
better,
like a 1B with Marvin Harrison Jr. Like you interchangeable. This Bears team, and now you're gonna have to help me with the wide receivers. Added Keenan Allen, added Rome Odunze, and they still have
DJ Moore,
and
I don't know if they got Mooney anymore.
No, I don't think so. But this Bears top three wide receiver crew.
Matt Stillwell. Sorry, that's what it was.
Okay, thank you. This wide receiver core for the Bears might be like the best situation that a rookie has ever come into, and as far as I can remember back, this dude has all the makings of having a super successful season with the Bears, and this offense is looking extremely potent. And by the way, fun thing with the Bears, round four, took a punter, the best punter in college football, who can bomb the ball 70 yards with that. I thought that was fun too, just a little icing on top.
The field position game. Yeah, I think the Bears, they hit home run with their draft. I think they hit on all spots that they needed to, filling holes with the quarterback, wide receiver, and offensive line, because they got in the third round, they got a lineman out of Yale. Shout out to the Ivy League schools. But they're surrounded. So the reason why Caleb Williams will have one of the best rookie seasons, I think, in the history of the game, similar to like a CJ Stroud, is because the Bears weren't the worst team in the NFL. They flirted with a chance of making the playoffs towards the end of the season because like they started to tick with Justin Fields, and they just happened to have the draft pick that Carolina stupidly got rid of to give them, obviously, for DJ Moore, right?
Yeah.
For DJ Moore. And it's just like, I don't understand like how anybody thinks that Caleb's going to like fail. Like, he has a top 15 defense, and he's going to have a top 15 offense with DeAndre Swift is the running back. So like, they have depth at multiple positions. They're going to be a tough team in the NFC North. You know, Packers better watch out. And we all see what's happening with the Vikings. Oh, sorry. This is the Lions. Sorry. The Lions are going to lead division, but we all see that they have the ability of being a contender for the division, not championship, but a contender for the division. Because you're getting a better version of Justin Fields, and Justin Fields had them in third place last season.
They'll, without a doubt, be quote unquote in the hunt. I wouldn't be surprised if they snuck in as like the last wild card team this year.
I see that too.
I want to throw one more winner, and then I will let you go with maybe like a team that you really liked what they did. This is gonna be a weird pick for a winner, like someone who I thought did a really good job with the draft. I'm not a big JJ McCarthy guy. But I was happy to see, there you go. I thought the Vikings did a great job of holding Pat. They didn't do anything stupid and trade up to 5 or trade up to 6 to get JJ McCarthy. They waited, got him at 10, right? Gave up minimal to go get their quarterback of the future. And then later on in the draft, they addressed another big position that they needed to address, an edge rush. Where was it? Where'd they pick? Now I have a tough time finding them. Anywho, where are you? Oh, they got a guy.
The Vikings got Dallas Turner in the first round. If you're talking about,
yeah, they traded back up. I was trying to find him on the draft sheet. They traded back up to get Dallas Turner, who was talked about for the longest time as the best defensive player in this class, if not
top 5, if there weren't all these quarterbacks.
Right, so they addressed their quarterback need. They had a huge need at edge rush, and they got arguably the best edge rusher in the class, Dallas Turner, out of Alabama.
Yeah, I liked what the Vikings did. You know, you got rid of Kirk Cousins. You had to address the quarterback position. You're not going to go into the season with Sam Darnold as your starter. I don't mind, you know, JJ at 10. There were talks with him potentially replacing Drake May at 3, right? Like, that's how high his stock got. So him being at 10, I don't mind that. If it's a quarterback that you need, go get him. I don't like waiting on it. So like, I'm never going to be upset about a team going to get their quarterback. What's up?
It makes me wonder what their plan was, because there was a lot of JJ McCarthy smoke like all throughout the pre-draft process. And then the Falcons trade up. We'll talk about the Falcons in a minute. They trade up to 8 to get Michael Penix Jr. I wonder if all along the Minnesota Vikings were targeting Michael Penix Jr. and they thought that Michael Penix Jr. would be available to them at 11. And that's why a team like Atlanta, who maybe really liked Penix, decided we're going to take him now and not trade back and try to get him later.
Potentially. You know, we're not going to ever hear about that, but like, both of them needed a quarterback. Sorry, the Falcons didn't need a quarterback. The Vikings needed a quarterback. My apologies. The Falcons just took one thinking about the future after paying one quarterback $100 million. So I don't understand that, but I do like the Vikings draft. They also got a very tall corner out of Oregon, 6'4", Kyrie Jackson. 6'4" corner.
mistake.
That's dumb, stupid. Yeah, that's just covering everybody that's out there. I don't know what his 40 time was, but like that's just size that you can't really teach. So I don't mind the Vikings. I think they really for you saying the Bears and the Vikings sticking with the NFC North. Like I think that's good for them.
Do you have any ones that you really liked before I get my honorable mentions?
Yeah, I'm gonna say probably because this is a flyer that a lot of people probably aren't thinking about. I think the Steelers.
I was gonna pick the Steelers. I was gonna say the Steelers.
Absolutely incredible draft. You know, you bring in Russell Wilson, Steelers country, let's ride. And then you got in the back end waiting for him to take his opportunity, Justin Fields. So what do you need to do when it comes to helping those guys out? You got to get offensive linemen, and they went offensive guard and center right away. Love those two picks. I've always said you can never go wrong with getting an offensive lineman. Their hit rate is absolutely incredible when it comes to the first and second round. But they also got, which I think is crazy to me that like it got to this, but the kid out of NC State, Peyton Wilson, like regarded as the best linebacker in college, but he doesn't have an ACL. I think he doesn't have a left ACL. He like tore
the Mike Perry.
But like he played 4 years, like it happened in high school.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh no, man. Like Ricky's ugly head out. It's like the man played ACC football. Like, what are you talking about? So like for them to get that steal in the fourth round, I think that helps because you hit your need when it comes to offensive linemen. You're always going to need old linemen to take care of your quarterback. And then for you to get a first round graded linebacker in the fourth round. Oh yeah. That's a home run.
I'm so glad you mentioned the Steelers because that was gonna be my first honorable mention. Because I think with the Steelers, their bread and butter, at least in the past couple of years, have been incredible defense, and they want to control the ground. It's kind of the old school style football, just eating the clock. And they stacked this offensive line. Their first round pick, Troy Fatanu, was regarded as like top two or three, probably top three offensive lineman prospect in this draft. And this was a very, very strong offensive lineman draft, top heavy wise. And this guy was, I think he was graded as like the 12th best player in the draft. They got him at 20. And not only do you cater to your strength in building up that offensive line with the Steelers, but this team with Russell Wilson and Justin Fields, you're going to find out quickly, are any of these guys the solution? Because if these guys can't cut it with the pieces around them, then it's just not going to happen. I think they also drafted a wide receiver that was like the perfect complementary slot receiver. I forget the name of the wide receiver they drafted. I think we were in the third round. What was it?
Roman Wilson, little guy out of Michigan.
Yes. We already know George Pickens is this giant mammoth of a man who can work the outside of the hash. They needed someone to help over the middle, and this guy's the perfect complementary to what they have in the wide receiver room already.
Yeah, I mean, I like, like I said, I like the Steelers when it came to draft, but I think there was one team that absolutely hit it out of the ballpark when it came to best draft. That's the Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles addressed so many needs. They went out there and had what we thought was going to be the best defense in the NFL, was not. And their first three picks, Quinyon Mitchell, corner, Cooper DeJean, Iowa white cornerback. Love that pick in the second round. But then they got an edge rusher out of Houston Christian. Later in the draft, they got Jeremiah Trotter Jr., who also his father played for the Eagles. Great pickup, obviously. I like that. And then you addressed two really important positions when it came to spelling, A.J. Brown and your running back situation. Will Shipley is a scat back, very similar to like a Darren Sproles. He's out of Clemson. And Johnny Wilson, the dude that torched LSU out of Florida State, 6'5 wide receiver who can just go out there and stretch the field because he's 6'5.
On the flip side,
I think the Eagles did a really good job.
No, I'm with you. I agree with you. And you know, they addressed the positions that really killed them and burnt them in the playoffs. So I think people are sleeping on the Eagles because of how they collapsed at the end of last year, but I would expect a bounce back year from them. On the flip side, teams that left you scratching your head, obviously we can't start this conversation without mentioning the Atlanta Falcons. Listen, in a vacuum, I get Michael Penix Jr. Like if we're just starting fresh, I like him as a prospect. I know he's a little bit older. He has the injury concerns, but a huge arm. Seems like he's a smart guy, can command an offense, and he's a prototypical built in like the character. Like, did you hear the quote about the quote he gave out?
Mm-hmm.
He did like a Players Tribune article, and basically, I'm paraphrasing it. But it was something along the lines of like, you know, you can judge me on my medicals and the scans of my knees and this and this and this, but there's only one test that you need to know when you're judging me, and that's my EKG. Are you familiar with what EKG is?
No. Is that like stock?
It's your heart. Oh. That was his quote. And you're just like, my man, like this is the guy I want. Let's go. Draft number one.
It's Russell Wilson 2.0. No, I like Penix Jr. I'm not going to hate on him for that.
On the flip side, that's in a vacuum. You just paid Kirk Cousins this offseason. I don't know, $100 million guaranteed. And the problem here is, like, I can see if you're drafting a 21-year-old who needs, like, the Drake May, right, who would benefit from sitting a year developing more. You're drafting a 24-year-old who's probably close to a finished product at this point. My point is, why are you drafting a guy who's ready to play now when you just signed a guy for 3 years? And another point that is probably the biggest reason why quarterbacks go so frequently in the first round for the NFL draft, there's a big emphasis today on this philosophy of drafting for value, which means you're drafting guys higher based on their open market value. So wide receivers get paid $25 million, like if they're good in the open market. Quarterbacks get paid $40, $50 million if they're top tier in the open market, right? The idea is that if you draft a quarterback in round one, you're paying him $7, $8, $10, $11 million over their first 4 years, correct? So you're getting like a $30 million value, right? As far as like what you would have to pay a free agent. And the reason why quarterbacks go so quickly is people love the idea of Brock Purdy, where you're paying him
against a $230 million salary cap. Yes.
But with Michael Penix Jr., you're burning essentially two of these years of value because unless you get rid of Kirk Cousins, which you're going to have dead money if you get rid of him, you're losing 2 years of that value. So you might get Penix Jr. under value for 2 years, but you're going to have to pay him if he's actually good.
So like I'm only going to do this because there's not too many people that are going to defend the Falcons. And for the flip side of it, because I don't agree with the draft pick, I love the fact that Penix Jr. got drafted, but not where he got drafted to. But I will defend Atlanta saying on the flip where you're saying they have 2 years and like essentially you lose those years for him because he's not going to be playing or he may not play as much. It actually may help you out in the re-signing market. Similar to like a Justin Fields. Fields isn't a top tier quarterback that's going to get the Brock Purdy money. If it's $40 million as a quarterback, Fields is going to get 20, 25, right? The later that you wait with a Michael Penix Jr., he might actually be in that same area because he's not really a finished product. I don't care if you're saying that we're seeing his ceiling already. I don't believe so because there's a guy out in Kansas City that just keeps getting better every single year. Quarterbacks play longer than they did 15, 20 years ago. So yes, even if he waits until he's 26 to get the starting position, that's still another four, if he's healthy, still another 14 years of him being a great quarterback. So like I see it as in that, again, just defending, I'm not saying as right or correct, or even I agree with it, but like I'm giving it from the perspective of Atlanta, of these quarterbacks stay till they're 38, 40 years old. So like I'll take 10 prime years of a Michael Penix Jr. from 26 to 36, putting up outstanding numbers versus hoping somebody in the draft hits and you get 15 years of mediocrity like the New York Giants.
I did hear a theory floated out there as well that the Falcons are getting dinged for tampering on something.
Ooh, yes.
And there was a theory floated out there that
I thought it was going to affect this draft, but it's not. It didn't.
No, there's a theory being floated out there that they might potentially lose like a first round pick in the future. And they might have been in on knowing that this is a possibility. So they might be looking at themselves in the mirror being like, well, shit,
we might not draft like this again.
If we can't get a quarterback next year, because you're on a first round draft pick, then we're in a situation where we're going to be scrambling last minute. So we like a guy now. We have the pick. Let's just make it. I would say they could trade back in that position and get him, but I don't think that was a possibility. And the last team I want to mention before we get to the closing takes, because it's getting late on time, is that the Denver Broncos are
my team. Go ahead.
Okay. I was gonna say the Denver Broncos are so happy that Michael Penix went at number 8 because no one's talking about the pick of Bo Nix, who didn't even have a first round grade at 12.
Stretch again. I'm not gonna be mad at a team for going to get their guy. If that's who you have circled, go get him. If you have a second round grade on him and he's there at 16 and you're afraid that he might not be there at 46, go get him. You know what I'm saying? Like I don't get a problem with that. Do I think Bo Nix is a developmental quarterback? Yes. I think, and he's also older. I think he might be second oldest in the class behind Penix Jr. So like he's gonna need some time. So if you're gonna just go out there and just throw wave the white flag and say the Chargers, the Chiefs, and the whoever the other team is in that division,
Raiders
are just better than you, then sure, go get them. Give them a year or two to develop behind a shitty offensive team, terrible defensive team. And then hopefully he's something by year 3.
Well, Sean Payton's looking at him, licking his lips, saying, "Oh, this is
Drew Brees,
the accuracy." Because I think he had like the highest accuracy percentage in college football, Division I. I think it's 70% or something. But it's all
to Marcus Mariota. This is the Oregon offense. Everybody's spread. Coaches can't play against it. So like, no, I ain't tripping with all of that.
All right. Shout out your team. You want to say something about this?
Just real quick. Yeah. I think this team got it absolutely wrong. What the hell were the New York Giants thinking? Now, hear me out. Love the fact that Malik Nabers is a top 10 pick. But with every hole that they have out there, you can't be grabbing a wide receiver at number 6 and then a safety in the second round. Like, Daniel Jones has thrown 15 or less touchdowns every single year that he's been in the NFL. You need a quarterback. You need an offensive line when your quarterback has been killed, literally on the field, was on pace to break the record for getting sacked the most in the history of a quarterback playing the quarterback position. And you drafted no linemen. So like I don't in this draft that was feeding offensive guards, offensive tackles, and centers, you addressed no need that you needed to help your quarterback or get your replacement quarterback for the guy that has done nothing but be mid since he's been drafted for your team. So
well,
I don't like the picks. I don't like the Giants draft at all.
They did have a need of wide receiver. We'll just say that. They did.
No.
Well, who was your...
Not number 6.
They drafted a guy who they believe can be a generational wide receiver, a guy who's been comped to, like, potentially Jamar Chase.
Yes.
Right. So
who does Jamar Chase have?
But let me finish. They probably looked at the situation and said, well, let's, instead of get the quarterback first and then build around them, let's build something around and then get the quarterback. I think that's their approaches in this draft. Drafting at position 6, they get the choice of J.J. McCarthy. Michael Penix Jr. would have been a reach at 6, and like a guy like Bo Nix. I'm sure they would have drafted a Drake May or Jaden Daniels or Caleb Williams if they had a chance. They must have evaluated and said, is it really worth drafting a J.J. McCarthy at 6, or can we get the generational wide receiver? And then maybe next year, the year after, we can take a dip at another quarterback if we're shitty again, which we might be. That's my look at it.
And you're doing what I had to do with the Atlanta picks. So like, I'm not mad at it, right? Do I agree with it? No. Am I mad that a LSU wide receiver got picked in the top 6? No. 3 picks in the top 22? No, I'm not mad at that. I just, when it comes to saying a team I don't think addressed needs, you can say a wide receiver is a need, but like, is it though? In a time frame where like there are 4 or 5 wide receivers on a team, like there's Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase, and then there's everybody else, right? You can find a wide receiver out there. We just saw Nico Collins have the career year. He's a household name now because of the quarterback. So like you can get a wide receiver. You can find a wide receiver out there. I just don't see how you don't take an offensive lineman.
I would say this. I think they would have taken Joe Hall if he fell to 6.
you got to go get somebody. Get the Lofa Tatua guy that was out of Oregon. Yeah. I don't even know how to pronounce his name. But yeah, get that guy.
All right, let's close out with some closing takes.
You got it.
All right. It's been a minute. I forgot where the button is. It's
long sounder.
It's been,
here we
it's
go.
It's been two weeks since we've done this.
The show is coming to an end. But first, it's time to get to anything we've missed. It's closing time. One segment, two takes. Go.
Closing takes, two random takes, sports world or otherwise. I'm going sports. I'm actually going to NFL draft since we're on the subject. I found this article today I thought was interesting, and I'm curious your thoughts in general. Bills with the... What pick number was it?
29.
221st overall pick in the draft. Drafted a rugby player, Travis Clayton, who has never played a snap of football in his life. Guy who's never played a snap of football in his life, drafted to the NFL. Crazy. He's 6'7" and runs a 4.7 40.
Huge!
D? Are you pro taking non-football players and putting them in the NFL? Do you think, I mean, football in general, of all the sports in the world, probably requires the least amount of skill. It's going to sound bad, but skill. Like, okay. Baseball is a very skilled sport. You have to take a lot of bats. Golf, very skilled. Basketball, you have to take a bajillion shots. If you're just a big motherfucker that's athletic as hell, you have a chance of just being good at football. Do you think this is a trend where we can see more non-football players making it to NFL just because they're athletic freaks?
No, not a trend, but like you see these one-offs. I think the 49ers got a rugby football fullback a couple of years ago. So like, I don't mind like round 6, 7, tail end of the round, you go out there and draft one of those guys that are just brutes. Also 6'7", running a 4.7 is crazy. I don't even know how much he weighs, but like, 4.7's moving for a 6'7 guy. That's quick. Wonder what his three cone is if he's an offensive lineman. I got no problem with that. Definitely strange. You know, I just went to go look at him because I didn't know who you were talking about. And I was like, oh my goodness. Oh, he's 307 pounds. So yes, I have no problem with you picking a 307, 6'7", you know, rugby player and throwing some pads on him. Got no problem with that whatsoever.
I mean, if we're talking like NFL football, the biggest thing is in the trenches, it's rugby, man. Like it's so similar to rugby. And why not? Why can't this guy do it?
Yeah, I think it's a good, hold on a second. I think I changed my TV by accident. I don't mind a pick by any means. I don't see it being a trend, but I can say, go ahead, Bills. Good way to get him out there. Maybe he doesn't even make the team. Maybe he does because of pure size.
All right, D, what you got for me?
So just to touch on what we were talking about earlier, it was
Really quick. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Your boy had over 192.5. It was going to go under. And I was like, shit just went to overtime. Your boy's about to cash. Let's go.
Good shit. Yeah, Tyrese Maxey just cashed a three with like 3 seconds left.
That's my guy.
But I was going to say it was RJ Hampton and the team was Georgia State where the coach was on his father was on the sideline. RJ Hampton's father was the one that had the torn knee.
Oh, good callback.
Yeah, so I had to go look it up. But yeah, that's what it was. RJ Hampton played for the Celtics. That's why I was like, it's RJ something. But my shout goes to Miss Parker. Miss Parker. Mrs. One Candace Parker. Candace Nicole Parker for retiring from the WNBA. I think it's flowers are deserved. And I don't care if you always hear me talking about the WNBA on my shout out or final takes, closing takes, whatever you want to call. This woman is a 3-time WNBA champion, finals MVP, 2-time league MVP. Not only was she a league MVP like twice, but she won it her rookie season. Ridiculous to win the MVP of a league your rookie season. Cap it off with being a 3-time national champion, Naismith a winner, high school, you know, baller of the year. Candace Parker did it right. You know, she went out there, won a championship early, ended up being injured, stepping away from the game. She played out and overseas. Well, we all know a lot of the women play overseas to try to get more bread. because the WNBA isn't really top dollar. I think Caitlin Clark is making like 75K a year. Like, you really don't make a lot of money playing NBA ball, WNBA ball. And she went out there and played overseas. Then she comes back, wins a championship for her hometown in Chicago. A little bit later, a couple of years, she goes out there and wins a championship with Kelsey Plum and Asia Wilson out in Las Vegas. So, like, kudos to you. Hell of a career. She's an incredible analyst on NBA TV, you know, watching her on, like, TNT with Chuck and Shaq and all them. So big shouts to Candace Parker. Definitely going to be missed. One of, I will say, a college like crush, because we were at Dartmouth when she was at Tennessee, and I was like, if only I was 6'5", because she's 6'4", but she's dating, like, she's married to like Sheldon Williams, who went to Duke. But no, big shouts to her. An absolutely incredible basketball career.
Good shit. Good shit. Yeah. Phenomenal career. I'm glad you shouted her out. All right, D, good show. A long one. But the NBA stuff dragged us down. But if you're just catching us now, check us live. Not live, but check us recorded on podcast tomorrow. Apple, Spotify, get the whole show then. But D, get us out of here right.
It's cool, bro. Just take my whole plug. I'll try to get us up out of here, even though you just said it. So for those that are listening to us live or watching us live, you can obviously follow us over here on Twitch. You can find us on YouTube and Facebook as we're streaming on Tuesday evenings, usually around 8 through 9 o'clock. Sometimes we run up a little bit later. Next day, you can follow us or you can find us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you can find your podcast. You can even hit us up on our website. That's at the bottom, frizzandthegrizz.com. My guy to my left is saying we're going to have some gear soon.
Already got it, man.
Already got the gear, but you guys can't get it. Only us. It's exclusive. Nothing that you guys can get. Please make sure, with the summer right around the corner, y'all take care of y'all mentals. We want to make sure we get into the gym. I need to hit the gym. So take care of y'all physicals. Take care of y'all chicken. Take care of y'all children. And we'll catch y'all on the rebound. Peace.
There's an old saying in Tennessee, I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on you. If fool me, we can't get fooled again.